From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The media landscape in the United States is rapidly shifting during a year that was a turning point for the nation, socially and politically. Traditional media outlets are struggling to capture the seriousness of Trump's election theft attempts, and social media are failing to curb his dangerous lies and conspiracies. Meanwhile, Fox News is suddenly discovering what fact-checking means, and Trump, angry over Fox's traitorous moves in calling the election for Joe Biden, is looking to amplify his message through his own media empire. How has this year's election exposed the ongoing crisis in journalism? Joining me to help discuss that is Victor Picard, associate professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania and the co-director of Media Inequality and Change Center. He has written widely about media, the news, communication, and democracy, and his latest book is called Democracy Without Journalism, Confronting the Misinformation Society, and we'd had him on to talk about that book. Welcome back, Victor.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about what it is that journalists and even the corporate media sort of have gotten right during this election. I mean, they've been pretty good about pointing out what Trump is doing, but they seem to not have, as usual, put the right context to it. Broadly speaking, would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's a fair statement. I'll admit that I was pleasantly surprised by how well some of the outlets and some of the individual reporters did during the run-up to the elections. They often reminded audiences that they were being very careful to declare someone being victorious. They kept cautioning listeners that this wouldn't just be election night, but arguably election week. So, they rose to the occasion in some ways. They even cut away from the Trump administration when they were launching into a torrent of lies and misinformation. So that was great, but it also raised the question, why weren't they doing this all along? They had 4 years to get this right. Why were they suddenly being adversarial and scrutinizing the president in the final days?
One of the criticisms leveled at the corporate media over these past 4 years is that often we saw pundits or analysts and reporters normalize Trump, normalize the threat of fascism that he represented, treat it as though, you know, treat the things that he was saying that were so outrageous and so outlandish as, you know, as if it was any president saying things that just simply should be reported. How do you assess how that changed or didn't change during the election?
Right. Well, again, we saw a relaxation of some of those norms in the days running up to the election. But I think for far too long, commercial media were practicing these mainstream norms that we've come to predict, which is an over-reliance on official sources, basically being stenographers for power, and practicing a kind of false equivalence, he said, she said, both sidesism, if you would. And so too many of these norms remained in effect for too long. Ideally, we would have seen more of this kind of challenging. And we also have to keep in mind that even as news media were becoming more adversarial throughout Trump's administration, they were still raking in enormous profits. It was still very much the Trump reality TV show. So even as they were pretending to be adversarial, they're often playing a bit role in this larger drama where Trump was dominating our attention all the time.
The reporting of polls is an interesting aspect of the election. We know 4 years ago, polling was deeply wrong. And it turned out that polling was also wrong this time around. Pollsters themselves have admitted that their industry is incredibly, is devastated, basically. How about the reporting of polls? Because, of course, Democrats might have been maybe mistakenly optimistic about their chances in the Senate and the House because the reporting of polls, which of course makes for this breathless horse race type coverage, led them to believe that they would perhaps control the Senate, expand their majority in the House, and the opposite happened on that. How did media outlets do when reporting polls?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it very much warped the broader conversation about, you know, our expectations leading up to the elections. It probably skewed some strategic choices in terms of, you know, how the Democratic Party was allocating resources. It was really quite disastrous. And as you note, it's a cornerstone of this horse race coverage. You know, what are the polls telling us now? Who's up? Who's down? Along with the, you know, what did one candidate say about another candidate?
And of course, it's not terribly surprising. It's tempting to do that. I'm sure I've been guilty of it myself. As a journalist, you see the polls, you see the tempting results that they point to. You want to report that. You want to believe it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was as guilty as anyone. I was glued. I was checking out the Cook political report daily. I was looking at Larry Sabato's crystal ball, you know, trying to figure out who's going to win this thing. But really, we were fooled once in 2016, and here we are again. And ideally, we'd be seeing more coverage on policy differences. You know, we'd be raising our level of political discourse during these moments when we're focused on such consequential decisions. And unfortunately, far too little of that discussion enters into our mainstream media news discourse. And so that's something we need to change going forward.
And then on election night itself, we knew from, because of pandemic-related restrictions that mail-in voting, early voting, and all of those other means of voting outside of in-person election day voting had expanded deeply, which made reporting necessarily different. Media outlets thrive every 4 years on reporting results from states, and often election night coverage becomes a ratings bonanza. It's an exciting night. Again, I can relate as a journalist. And of course, that was very different this time around. We saw an election that was spread out over a week. How did this election sort of expose that model of covering elections is really a failed model?
Right. Well, I think it exposed two things. One is that too often our major news outlets treat this all as a big sporting event. So the fact that there isn't a clear winner on election night really blows a hole in that model. And it also shows that they're constantly trying to report on things, even when there wasn't a change. So they had to keep coming back saying, all right, well, we won't know anything more for a few more hours with the state of Georgia. But ideally, we wouldn't be getting these constant updates about how nothing's actually happening. Meanwhile, I think the second thing that's revealed is that there were huge stories being almost entirely neglected, such as voter suppression efforts. That should have been the single most important story leading up to the election, the extreme efforts that the GOP was taking, that Republicans were taking, trying to prevent people from voting. And then, of course, we've been seeing how they're trying to delegitimate the election, which is a whole other story. This is something that our news media should be critically covering day in and day out.
Let's talk about Fox News. Much is being made of the fact that Fox was the first news outlet to call Arizona for Joe Biden, a traditionally red state where a Democrat has not won the presidency since 1996. It was the moment where at the Trump indoor White House party on election night, the campaign, you know, I think perhaps for the first time, confronted the fact that Trump might not win and were outraged not at the results, but at Fox itself. And then Fox has sort of continued to be, let's just say less Fox-like. But this is a news outlet that has for many decades laid the groundwork for a Trump presidency. Is Fox going to be able to absolve itself by, you know, once in a while fact-checking?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't think they could ever absolve themselves for all the damage that they've done over the last decade or so. But I do think you're noticing an interesting shift, or at least a change in the relationship between Fox and President Trump. And of course, Trump has been encouraging his viewers to leave Fox to go to places like OAN or Newsmax or Breitbart, where, you know, he has a more welcoming audience. So it'll be interesting to see how things change going forward. But if you watch Fox in the evening, you'll listen to Tucker Carlson tell his millions of viewers that this entire election was fraudulent, that dead people were voting. Sean Hannity is also amplifying these outrageous conspiracy theories. So in many ways, Fox is still doing its thing. It hasn't changed that much.
In fact, I want to pick up on what you were saying earlier about the way in which news outlets had been for years making so much money off of the Trump phenomenon, if you will. And Trump himself kind of acknowledged that on Friday when he attacked Fox News, saying in a tweet, actually it was a Thursday, he said, "Fox News daytime ratings have completely collapsed. Weekend daytime even worse. Very sad to watch this happen. But they forgot what made them successful, what got them there. They forgot the golden goose. The biggest difference between the 2016 election and 2020 was Fox News." I don't know if Trump was trying to blame Fox News for his loss at the race, but certainly he pointed out the fact that media outlets have made money off of the, you know, outrage that he whips up. CBS's leadership had said as much, I recall, in 2016 when asked why they give somebody like Trump so much airtime. He has been a boon to especially television corporate media outlets, right?
This is absolutely correct. And I think you're referring to Les Moonves, the now former CEO of CBS, who said, you know, this constant coverage of Trump might be bad for America, but it's damn good for CBS. That was his exact quote. I almost used that as the title of my book, damn good for CBS. So I think that speaks volumes as to where the true values lie for our commercial media. And this also includes our so-called, you know, liberal media like MSNBC, for example. They are making tremendous profits, and it's all about the ratings. It sounds like a cliche to even point that out, but it's all Trump is fantastic for their ratings. He is money in the bank. He's inherently controversial. He causes drama wherever he goes. And that plays into these commercial values where these outlets just want to keep eyes glued to various screens so that they sit through advertisements, or if you're online, they're collecting information about you. This is their core business model. And Trump has been very good for their business. Bad for democracy, but good for business.
And right there is that crisis in journalism, this this profit-based model of covering the news. When covering the news is so critically important to democracy, but if that coverage is dependent on making a profit, sometimes at all costs, then democracy itself will suffer. And we've seen that in 4 years of a Trump presidency, more so even than before. Now, Trump is very, his main business model as a businessman has been branding and name recognition, the Trump name. He doesn't really actually run any businesses other than slap the Trump name on the front of buildings and golf courses. And now he's looking to basically start his own media empire. The One America News Network is a big one. And of course, he still commands the allegiance of outlets like Breitbart. And even where social media companies are concerned, there are now alternative social media platforms that are opening up because apparently Facebook and Twitter are censoring the right wing too much, when of course they're censoring them too little. You still have Sinclair. There's Newsmax, which is this new right-wing news outlet that's being seen as an alternative to Fox. Could Trump's presidency spawn an even greater and insidious right-wing media empire?
Yes, he could. It's a very dystopian vision, but there's a lot of speculation that that's exactly what he's trying to do already. He's trying to set the groundwork for that. One of the reasons perhaps why he is challenging Fox News so aggressively. And also, I think you hinted at this earlier when you mentioned the journalism crisis. Not only are we seeing an explosion of right-wing media, and I would say it goes beyond just the fact that it's right-wing media. It's just the fact that so much of the information being produced throughout all of our media is very low quality, very factless news and information. But also we're losing actual journalists. We've lost well over 50% of all of our newspaper employees since the early 2000s. So increasingly you see these news deserts spread out across the country where there is no local news left whatsoever. That also is a big problem and should be part of this conversation.
And these news outlets, you know, you would imagine that in the United States that you couldn't call yourself a news outlet if you're not adhering to facts. Can you put into context the laws and regulations that allow even Fox News, although it has a news department that's distinct from its opinion section, that allows Fox and Newsmax and Sinclair and all of these to operate in a relatively, you know, in a sort of fantasy realm where facts just matter less than opinion and still call themselves news outlets? How does America allow it?
Yeah, there's a very long history behind this that I've been studying for a number of years, and I could talk about for hours, but I'll spare your listeners for now and your viewers. But I will say this, that basically, we have very few policies in place to rein this in whatsoever. It's been more reliant on norms. And those norms, of course, have been eroding for many years now. We used to have a thing called the Fairness Doctrine. That was thrown out in 1987. A lot of people know it or think of it as ensuring balance. You know, that was the whole thing of Fox, right? It was supposed to be fair and balanced. But it was also about broadcasters having to go out and find out what local communities want to hear on their airwaves and to cover controversial issues. So there was this more affirmative mission as well. And there's very little of that left in our news media now. So it's in some ways we have to look for creating entirely new structures, which is what I advocate for, to try to create a broader public media system. As long as it's commercial, we're going to be very much at the mercy of these run amok commercial values where facts no longer matter.
So when we are looking forward to this post-election era, you know, as millions of Americans breathe a sigh of relief and look to President-elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, what do you expect from news media in how they will cover this new administration? Because a big part of the problem hasn't just been that corporate media have given right-wing leaders and Republicans a pass. They have often set the agenda for the Liberal Party. And most recently, you've seen the sidelining of progressive values and the centering of those centrist, right-leaning, but liberal-sounding values that the establishment Democratic Party loves to rely on. So it's going to be a big challenge because the Democratic Party and its base is changing, is veering towards progressive values more so than ever.
This is all true. And I think you're right. We're going to see a return. In fact, we're already seeing that in the earliest days. We haven't even seen the actual transition to a new administration. And our mainstream media are already reverting back to this kind of status quo position where they're going to advocate for centrism, whatever that means, and moderate political views, even though, as you note, not only among young people, but Americans writ large, progressive values prevail on many core issues, whether we're talking about Medicare for all or a Green New Deal. There are large numbers, even majorities in many cases, of Americans who support these very progressive positions, and yet our mainstream media try to cast that outside of acceptable discourse. They refer to it as far left positions. So I think this tension will continue to play out. Mainstream media will try to focus on very business friendly, centrist political positions. But meanwhile, the Democratic base is going to be pushing for more progressive positions. And we'll see these tensions play out in the months and years ahead.
Right. And of course, now one thing that's different is that you have members in Congress who are reflective of the growing desire for progressivism and progressive policies. You have the Squad, you have Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, And they are very media savvy, and they seem to have taken, they seem to have changed the narrative and made it very difficult for the corporate media to keep hammering on that same centrist values that, you know, and demanding that Biden return to the Obama era.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And we'll continue to see them pushing back. And of course, the squad has increased its numbers now. There are even more, in many cases, self-identified Democratic socialists in Congress. So I think this is an exciting new chapter in our media and politics, where younger people, as you say, media savvy people, are really going to be pushing the envelope on what we can talk about in mainstream discourse. And that's an exciting prospect. And I would go so far to argue that there's a lot riding on that, including the survival of our planet. And that's why we need to be talking about things like the Green New Deal.
Right. And the Green New Deal and Medicare for All and all of these issues are in the news precisely because grassroots activists have pushed on them for years and now have, you know, people like AOC and others in Congress echoing that, forcing the news media to cover them. Because we go back to the thing you were talking about earlier, where the reliance on official sources, which has dictated so much media coverage, now forces them to include those official sources like members of Congress. And we didn't have that before. So it certainly will be interesting to see how the mainstream corporate media behaves in the years going forward. Victor, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Victor Picard. He is associate professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the co-director of the Media Inequality and Change Center. And he's written widely about news media, communication, and democracy. His latest book is called Democracy Without Journalism, Confronting the Misinformation Society. You can find the interview I did with him about that book on our website. And we've just been discussing how this year's election exposed the crisis in journalism. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.